The Consciousness Salon is a bi-monthly conversation where community activist Alana Roche meets with psychologist Dr. Lauren to explore current and historical issues in order to disrupt current paradigms and offer restorative tools and practices.
We will be discussing issues ranging from gender parity to internalized misogyny, shadow work, microaggressions, looking at our own internalized conscious or unconscious racism, and at the end of the day, how all of this affects how we feel about ourselves and others, and so much more.
Welcome back, everyone. Hi, Lauren.
Hi, Alana.
How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm well. We're having a nice little heat wave here.
Oh, my God. A muggy one.
Yeah, it's been a little humid for LA. It's a bit weird.
It's very strange. And I have to say, there's mosquitoes, which is like, I just have to complain for a moment. I'm from the East Coast. I grew up in the East Coast. I survived many summers with mosquito bites that made me look like I had the chicken pox. And one of the reasons I love living here and spending the big bucks to live here is it's a bug-free place.
But in theory.
Not right now.
Yeah, it's a bit weird. I woke up with either a spider bite or a mosquito bite. I mean, now that you're saying mosquito, it's now
I mean,
debatable.
You know, I'm telling you, there's a lot of them.
Well, I haven't seen any, but I believe
it's
you.
It's in a weird spot.
Oh, it's the worst. Mine's on my elbow. It's really awkward.
Anyway, so, you know, it's funny. In California, we mostly typically complain about the traffic, not the weather. But 2019, we've been complaining about the weather, right? Yeah. I mean, it's really been a funky year.
Which is
for us.
Funny because we've had so many years of consistent heat waves, long, long summers where we had basically no winter. That this year
right.
we actually had a really long winter.
Right.
And I'm really okay with that. It was really nice to have cool weather for so long. So we're in July now and we're getting hit. And you know what? It was a nice run.
It was a nice run.
I'm happy with it. But it is a bit weird. It started drizzling yesterday.
Yeah, no, it's just...
Yeah, and it was 80.
Unusual.
It felt like Florida.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Hello, Florida.
Ah! Welcome.
That's
our little tangent about the weather and how we're feeling. Hope everyone else is doing well. Thank you for returning to our podcast. Thanks for listening in. Today we are going to be talking about bisexuality.
Yes, it's part of our sort of Pride Month, looking at all the sexual orientations and gender identities and kind of giving a well-rounded consciousness-raising look at the LGBTQ queer community, right?
Yeah, because in our previous episodes, we really focused on lesbian visibility and just different elements around the lesbian community. And I really feel like this is a really important topic to piggyback on that, kind of extend that conversation, because I think lesbians have a hard time. Those who identify as lesbians in the community have a hard time. Some of them have a hard time.
Some of them, yeah, for sure.
Some of them have a hard time navigating those who do identify as bisexual.
Yes. And
for various reasons.
Right.
The list.
And that's actually not what we're going to get into today. We get into a little bit of that later. But in another season. But I mean, but we want to really just give lots of. We want to give voice and consciousness raising and space to this very valid.
Yes.
Very
bisexuality
real.
Is real. It's valid. And sadly, it's mostly misunderstood.
Yes. Still.
Yes. Well, gosh, I feel like if anything, now more than ever, it's more understood, or at least we're giving it the attention it deserves. Finally. But yet, a lot of our community is still struggling with the concept. So I'm really glad that we're able to kind of carve out some time to highlight this particular orientation and this community.
Yeah, me too. Yeah, because a big part of it, like, you know, is the invisibility as well as biphobia or judgment we were talking about, or,
yeah.
You know, a lot of different reactions to it. So
It's hard for them to be out and proud.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah. And this community exists amongst us. They're in the shadows, sadly. So, you know, if we maybe create more awareness, educate ourselves, maybe we can work on that and creating a safer space for them to come out, be more visible. And yeah, I just want to be more mindful about that.
Yeah, that's so great. And then at the end of this podcast, we'll have some resources and things like that's going on in the community regarding pride, by pride and things like that, and other resources, some psychological or, you know, help, things out there that are helpful. So we'll get into that later, but
yeah, we'll also post that on the site.
Right.
Yeah. For people to access later, but we'll also mention it.
Yeah.
So let's dive right in.
All right. So basically just to get real,
create some context here.
Yeah. Create some context. Thank you. This orientation basically is people who identify as bisexual are attracted to erotically, romantically, and emotionally and physically to both genders. So there you have it.
Great definition. Yes.
Love it.
Yes.
That's what it is.
Just in case our listeners were unaware of what bisexuality is, there you go.
And also one of the misconceptions is it's always the gateway to becoming either gay or lesbian, right? And that's not the case. Sometimes it may be, but there are these strong opinionated people that say it is the gateway and you just don't know it yet or you need to choose or what have you. And no, that's not the case for a lot of folks. So big shout out for that. And let's see. So today we were talking about doing a deep dive into opposite sex and same sex eros. And we wanted to come from it from this Jungian perspective today. Now,
Lauren's favorite.
One of my favorites. Yes, yes, yes. Well, my PhD was deeply rooted in Jungian philosophy. And so, and Jung, for those of you who don't know him, I mean, this guy was a genius of, like, it's almost even hard to comprehend the brain power.
And this is Carl.
Carl Jung.
Yeah.
From Switzerland. And he's one of the founding fathers of psychology. And his brain power is unreal. Like, he was so prolific. They still have a lot of writing that they're editing and deciphering and putting into books. And he had written a ton of books when he was alive. So the problem with Coral is he had a lot of white, male, cisgender, straight privilege. He also happened to marry an extremely wealthy woman which gave him a lot of freedom to do the work that he did. So there's like a double-edged sword there. He had all this privilege that he maybe wasn't totally aware of, but he also then had all this freedom to create all these theories and help us understand our psyche more. So much of it that I love, that, you know, that I use in my work, that is so helpful for us to understand ourselves better. And with that awareness, you know, change our lives, change how we manage ourselves or how we know ourselves or how we can explain to other people and ourselves how to know us better, how to know our other people that are important to us better, things like that. So he was amazing in that sense, but he was extremely heterosexually oriented as well.
But I also love that what he was able to contribute to psychology, which you'll talk about later. I mean, so much has been birthed from these ideas as well. I mean, it's such a great launching kind of foundational concepts that has allowed us to kind of work from that.
Right.
And explore and discover other items that you'll...
Right. And we're going to get into a couple specific ones. And so basically Freud was the one who discovered what we now call the unconscious. Before Freud, there was no terminology for it. There was no definition of it. And people didn't realize that there was a bunch of stuff going on underneath inside of us that were out of our awareness. And then Jung took that concept, really studied it in when he was getting his MD, and then like blossomed into all these other ideas of like what is going on in our unconscious, a big one being the shadow. But we're not going to get into that today, but we will. And another one being having to do with our arrows. So for him being straight oriented, he discovered what he called the animus and the anima. And they are these archetypes located inside of us, because we have a lot of archetypes inside of us. The shadow is an archetype, right? The psyche is an archetype. And what is an archetype? So an archetype is basically a concept, a construct with images and feelings and ideas and thoughts that are inside of each one of us. Mm-hmm. So what is really interesting about it is it's cross-cultural. It's not like, okay, well, this is only a Western construct. It's like, no, these are cross-cultural. We can see it when we study all kinds of cultures. It may manifest differently. They may use different words, imagery. Different imagery, what have you, but they will have something that's very similar. So for other sex-oriented people who identify as heterosexual or straight, Jung described these archetypes inside of us as the anima and the animus, and it influenced and kind of helped guide you towards who you were attracted to or drawn to. So, and it's something you're born with. So if you end up with a type, your type is connected to this archetype, right?
Oh, I'm so fascinated by this.
Right. And many of us have types, right? It's like, oh, well, I'm into that kind of person. I find myself drawn to that kind of look. He would say that's your, you know, this, you know, erotic archetype inside of you. So he talked a lot about it for straight people, right? You know, and he said, okay, if you're a man, you know, you're going to have the anima inside of you, and then you're going to have this kind of image of who you're attracted to, and then you're going to project it onto the person that you're drawn to, and it's going to have your ideas and feelings and thoughts and fantasies about it. And that projection can often be what you're putting onto the person, and it may not be totally who they are. So that's when we're kind of getting through a beginning relationship stage, when you're projecting all your stuff onto somebody, idealizing them, and then later on you realize they've got all these other aspects of themselves that you don't know about yet, right?
That's why it trips me out when folks believe in love at first sight. I'm like, who are you kidding?
Right. There's so much projection there.
You're kidding yourself,
right? Right.
What are you really saying?
I saw you for the first time. I saw you, and you're the love of my life.
Yeah. It's like that.
Right. Yeah. It's
lot. Sorry, folks. I am calling some of you out, but.
Or if you're married to that person and it's working for you, wow, great.
I want to hear that story.
Yeah, exactly. Right.
It just blows my mind.
Yeah, it is. I agree.
But in the hetero dynamic or concept, what would be a good example? Could you share an example for our listeners about how, let's just say, a man, there's an archetype inside of himself that he's projecting onto this woman that he's drawn to, that he sees, and what would be a good example of that?
Well, it might even be just a physical type, like, say, he's into brunettes who are, you know, mid-height and have a certain kind of eye color or a certain kind of body type.
But is that archetype, is that archetype somehow connected to a personal reference?
Yes, so that's connected to your personal psyche, not the collective psyche, right? So that would be something that you're just is inside of you
through your history, your upbringing.
Yeah, even something that you're like born with. I mean, for Jung, archetypes are like in us when we're born, and you know, depending
there's no influence from like family or That's so interesting to me.
Well, there's influence for sure, but it's also innate. So it's kind of like holding both, right?
Wow.
So the other piece is this, you know, the other piece is, of course, this is just the archetypal piece, because the other piece has layers of like, you're attracted to somebody also because you're trying to fix some problems you had with your parents through your partners, right? So we have that whole piece as well. But this was kind of this interesting concept that he had come up with and said, look, we all have this, and this is what you project. And if you're like really turned on by somebody just by looking at them, this is an aspect of this part of the archetype. You know, that kind of thing. And we're going to get into that in a little bit, right?
Yeah. Now we're going to actually connect it to
So
sexuality and...
Right. So that's for the other sex-oriented people, right? Jung was really good at talking about that. But he didn't talk about anything to do with same-sex-oriented Eros at all. And then in 1976, a gay theorist named Mitch Walker, he wrote an article called The Double, and he had come up with the double archetype. And that was the same sex oriented archetype that was also inside of us. So to give us some visibility and understanding of same sex oriented folks, like, wow, when you have a type, you know, that you're really attracted to them. He also said inside of that double is for the same sex, it's got your, you know, your sort of idealized archetypal mother in there, possibly a sister, a daughter if you have one, and then a lover if you're same-sex oriented. If you're straight, you have the double because you have the archetypal mother, possibly sister or daughter in there, but you're not going to have the lover if you're straight. But if you're bisexual, you're going to have the lover, and if you're lesbian and queer, you're going to have the lover piece. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
Cool. So that was really important visibility and bringing in theory for same-sex oriented people to say like, okay, wait, there is also an archetype for us that explains a number of things, including why I have this type and not that type, or why I'm drawn to this kind of woman and not that kind of woman, for instance, you know? And I mean, that's really basically kind of the concept, and I want to keep it sort of, you know, digestible. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I am just flipping through the list of crushes I had when I was younger, and you know.
Well, can we get into the really interesting thing
about... So I'm just like kind of blown away by this conversation, because I'm like analyzing now the crushes and all those relationships that I was drawn to when I was younger, when it was very unconscious.
Right. What a good point.
That's also, I'm like sitting here listening going, wow, okay, now I'm really fascinated. Let me dive into my history of those attractions.
So.
And there's definitely, there's a type.
There's a type.
There's definitely a type. So.
Continue. See, right? There's a type.
There's definitely a
so
type.
So let's go into that for a second. Can we kind of look
put at... Put me on the spot?
Yeah. Well, because, you know, I have the one thing I know about you that I think would be really interesting to talk about. If you're open to it.
I'm not sure what you're about to say right now, but sure, go for it.
Well, your fantasy around Kristen Stewart.
Oh, right. Oh my goodness.
Yes, and how your double archetype may have been really, you know, so drawn to her and then projecting a lot of stuff onto her.
Yes.
Through her films, right?
Well, let's just be super clear about this. This is what how it's so layered, because it's not just her specifically, and it's actually not her in her films, her multiple films. It has to do specifically with one movie that right. she starred in, and her portrayal of a particular person who exists in real life, who I actually have had a crush on. Well, I should say the 25-year-old version of that person, who is Joan Jett.
Right, exactly.
I have this crazy crush on the 25-year-old Joan Jett, or early 20s, I should say. I shouldn't say 25, but the early 20s version of Joan Jett. And when... Kristen Stewart, is it Kristen or
Kristen.
I don't know. Okay. Kristen Stewart.
Portrayed her
in the movie The Runaways.
The Runaways.
It was a wrap, Lauren. Sign, sealed, delivered. I had no idea what hit me. Like a bus. Wowzers. So,
oh my God.
So yes, Lauren does know that about me. That is definitely fact.
Oh my definitely God, that makes me laugh so hard. I definitely
should own that movie, but because I know better,
yeah,
I don't.
You actually can't.
Yeah.
Like, that's just not a good idea.
I really need to be productive with my time, so.
Okay, so.
And, you know, be respectful of my current partner.
Right, right. Like, that's really where it comes down to, right? It's like, and not engaging in that kind of
fantasy
stuff. It's not that healthy.
Yeah.
So healthy. I you know, I'm gonna put it out there too. We ended up having the same crush on the same person.
Crazy, right, folks? What are the chances?
So I had a whole fantasy addiction thing with Kristen Stewart too. Now mine, I mean, The Runaways helped, but mine went through that crazy Twilight movie. So I wasn't even into the books. I wasn't into any of it. And then one day I just rented it for whatever reason. And there, I mean, I'd always had this thing with vampires since I was like in my 20s. Read all the Anne Rice books, you know, was in it with a bunch of people. We were all like hyped on this stuff. And then so here we've got Kristen Stewart, who's my type, playing, you know, with the vampires, with superpowers, because of course that is something I'm really like. I love the fantasy idea of superpowers.
Me too.
It was like this trio of like, it was like I was hit by a bus.
That was your trifecta.
Oh, I was done. I was done. And I can't even tell you how many times I've seen that movie because it would get me high. And then I would have
the Twilight movies.
Yeah. The Twilight movies. Cause then I would sit there and say, oh, well, he's not really a guy. You know, I'd get into all that.
What?
Yeah.
I'd
start seeing like, you know, anyway,
So let's talk about that though. Let's talk about how, first of all, Crazy Town USA, how the two of us found this very specific obsession with this one actress
who wasn't out yet, but nope. I knew. Well, oh my God.
After watching The Runaways, I'm like, how could she not?
Right. Be? Yeah, no, I knew.
That's offensive.
Yeah.
But what is it with us? What is the archetype, the double archetype within us?
So for me, it's what I lovingly have coined the tweeners. And so in our community, the gender expression, you know, there's a lot of different names, right? There's butch, there's femme, there's sporty lesbian, there's boy with an I, there's androgynous, right? There's a lot of, you know, and I've always taught about it, I've said there's this gender expression spectrum, and there's a whole line of different ways that we express ourselves, right? And then you can identify with a certain expression if you want or not. I ended up saying, well, there's one for me that I see that lies in the middle. And I started saying they were tweeners because they're in between. So here we have these tweeners because they're in between the butch and the femme, which is sort of on the other side of each spectrum, right? And that's my type. Like there's something about they have an edginess to them. There's a masculine energy there, but there's a feminine energy. And there's just something about that mixture that's it for me.
You know what I call that? My term? Hard femmes.
Hard femmes. Interesting.
I mean, I always toyed with that term. And then a couple years or three, I don't know, a few years ago, a friend of mine, I was having the same conversation with her and she said, oh, you know what you are? You're a femme daddy.
A femme daddy.
And it blew my mind.
Right?
So they all kind of fall within that same circle.
And I just kind of see this spectrum and I see them like sort of all line up in there. Right?
Yeah.
So that, and then, you know, Honestly, if I'm going to get real honest, because I'm in recovery for my own love addiction stuff. Obviously, I wrote a book about it.
yeah, you know, great book.
I would get high off of watching this movie and The Runaways as well. I would get like a high from it. Like I must have. I think I was definitely emitting oxytocin as I watched it. Just like
I sure felt that way,
didn't it? It's like this high comes, you know. So that's the power of these archetypes. They can do that to us. They can actually have us emit these,
activate that,
these neurotransmitters.
Crazy.
Like, you know, generating outside of us, you know, and it's just like, so that's why you can feel like you're madly in love with somebody that you just saw that you don't know. Right? Because there's just all this powerful, powerful stuff going on. So that's why it's so helpful to have awareness around these archetypes so that you can know that these actually exist and then you can work with them, right? Because when they, you know.
And understanding how our body works.
Right. And then
how our body responds. I mean, I think that was a huge lesson for me in terms of my own awareness and recovery, was that a lot of the times when I was single and meeting women, I would always say this to myself. I would always go, if she's hot and I'm drawn to her, chances are it'll be a hot mess.
Right. Oh, 100%.
And that was my way of checking myself.
Yes.
And going, okay.
Yeah, I want to go do that, but I've done that several times. It's always a hot mess. I have to set that boundary, right?
For myself. Yeah.
Yeah, 100%. So that's, I think.
So in terms of, you know, these archetypes, same sex, I just want to make sure we connect it back and circle back to, you know, same sex attraction.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
And for all genders.
For all genders.
I mean, the bottom line is that is really the connection here, right? The same sex eros. Right, that we are able to, that really supports how same-sex and you know, genders are attracted to each other. I think it's really fascinating.
It's fascinating, you know, and then we've got, you know, for someone who's bisexual, they're going to have, you know, the opposite sex archetype that has a lover piece to it. And the double archetype piece that has a lover piece to it. Those are both going to be inside of them and they're going to be, you know, drawn and have their types and so on and so forth.
Wait,
right?
Say that one more time.
Okay, so for a bisexual person, the opposite sex archetype is going to be inside of them and have a lover, you know, erotic quality to it. And they're going to have the double archetype and it's going to have the erotic quality to it. So they're holding both inside. Right. And then both of those are going to be attracted to folks, whatever those types may be, whatever that archetype is for them. Right.
And that's innate.
And that's innate, you know. And then if we look at something like the Kinsey scale, which is got its problems, but is also helpful. You know, we've got 0 is heterosexual and 6 is homosexual. And really what's so valid about bisexuality is, you know, there's a lot of folks that lie around the 3 or the 4 or the 2 or the 1, you know, just somewhere in between the 0 and the 6.
Are you implying that the majority of people lie between the 4, around the 4?
Well, I can't say that I have the statistics in front of me right now, so I do. Yeah, we could pull that up, but I know more, and what Kinsey found is a lot more folks were, and this was in the 50s, and that's a great movie, by the way, if you're interested in knowing what Kinsey's sex studies found, was that a lot of people were having same-sex experiences and not telling anybody about them.
And what's the movie?
Kinsey.
Oh, the movie's called Kinsey.
Yeah, and it's about this guy, Kinsey, who developed this scale around sexual orientation. And what he did is he just interviewed folks anonymously for a very long time. He and his team, it's the most fascinating story. And that's when they found out, before that, everyone thought most people were heterosexual, period, end of story. That's the way it is. That's how everybody is. And he came back and he was like, I got news for you. Like, there is so much more variation going on out there. And
it's just hidden. It's just closeted.
And it's a problem that we're not talking about it. And his report that came out was extremely important for our community and for people in general to understand that sexuality is complex and that there's all kinds of ways to, you know, to be attracted. So that's also a piece of bisexuality. For someone who's purely bisexual, they would be right in the middle, which is three, right? But then people might be a four. Even, you know, some lesbians who identify as lesbian might be a five. They're not a six. You know, some have been with men. Say it was, you know, I realize that's not for me, but it wasn't awful or it wasn't, you know, and, you know, of course, there's lesbians who have never been with men. But so.
Yeah, no, I think it's so validating to hear you say that because there are the gold stars, right? But the majority of us are not gold stars.
Right.
Gold stars are actually quite rare.
That's right.
So the majority of us, I would like to say, do not live in this
black and white sort of either or world.
Number one or six.
Yeah.
It's true. Now, where we fall on the scale, whether it's a five or a four or the other way, you know, two or three, I mean, it's... That makes a lot more sense to me.
Doesn't it? And then with bisexuality, you might meet some bisexual people and they're like, yes, I'm definitely bisexual, but their lifestyle has led to the point where it's more of a two or a three.
This also is really validating for why a younger generation is embracing queer.
Exactly. And pansexual. And fluid. Yes. And especially in their 20s saying like, I don't know who I am yet. Let's just have fun.
Right.
Play.
Man, I was in my 20s. I mean, if I had this language and context and terminology in my 20s, I get it.
Yeah,
it makes perfect sense.
Yeah, it does make perfect sense. And then more in your 30s, you want to sort of figure, for a lot of folks, some people will want to figure it out in their 20s. There are some very mature 20s, 20-year-olds. Then there's some that are like the 20s are to kind of play and figure things out. And the 30s is when it gets serious. Okay. So really quickly, what we did want to say was we have a bi Shiro today that we wanted to highlight.
Yes.
As we wind down. And her name is Frida Kahlo from Mexico. And she was a bisexual Latinx woman.
She was. And she, you know... I am not going to speak as the expert, but I do really appreciate her. She was so courageous.
Ugh, amazing.
And her strength. And though her, you know, it was no secret that she had affairs. She was married and had affairs with women and famous women for that
matter. And it was open. Like it was an open relationship.
Well, I cannot confirm or deny that.
Right.
But I just really respect the fact that she really allowed herself to be with women and to express herself fully that way. And it's really inspiring.
Yeah, and she's such an icon now. I mean, she's just blown up, right? Over the last, I don't know, decade. We just, you know... You go to Mexico, her image is everywhere, her art is everywhere, her beautiful art has had many multiple world tours. And one of the reasons, I mean, she's a Shiro for so many reasons, but she also did this incredible painting called The Two Fridas, or Las Dos Fridas, where she painted herself side by side holding her hands, and I think that's a really beautiful example of the double. Right. If you want to see a visual of the visual of the double is everywhere. If you really are interested in this, you can start looking around and you'll see that there are pictures of people of the same gender side by side all the time. We're very drawn to it because archetypes are very image oriented. Right. So we're very drawn to that. But she actually painted it in this amazing way. And it's one of her most beloved and famous paintings. So I think that's a really nice way to kind of show that and highlight that. And also, of course, how amazing she was and accomplished. And there's these incredible pictures of her. One, she's wearing a suit. And the picture was actually taken by her father. So she came from a very progressive family. And of course, there's the amazing movie made of her life. And you get to really see...
By Selma Hayek.
Yeah. You get to see what she went through. So...
Yeah.
We wanted to kind of have a Shiro today.
Yeah, we wanted to just give her a little shout out. And all those who are Frida fans and recognize her beauty, her essence, her talents. Mm. But we are going to wrap it up for this episode. But we also wanted to share with all of you some resources, and we didn't forget. And if you want to go to the LGBT Center website, they actually have...
That's the LA one, right?
Oh,
LA,
thank you for that. Los Angeles LGBT Center website. They actually have a coming out workshop for men, for women, for trans. So it doesn't specify the orientation. Okay. It just goes into gender. So doesn't matter of your gender, but it is a great resource. And they have meetings, they have workshops, and they welcome ages 18 plus, and it's free. So if you are looking for that, feel free to call 877-OUT-FOR-LIFE. And, they will get you connected to the next workshop, or you can Google it, and we will also post the link on our episode.
Yes, absolutely. Thank you for that resource, Alana.
Yeah, no problem.
Very appreciated. And also, West Hollywood and a couple of other organizations are having their second annual Bi Pride event this September. And the first one was last year, and it's thought that it's the first real Bi Pride
in the world.
In the world, last year,
West Hollywood,
which is unbelievable, and
sponsored with AMBI.
With AMBI, which what is AMBI?
Unclear.
Okay, that's all right. Look it up.
Butcher it.
I know. Me neither. I don't either. But anyway,
I am so, bi. I don't know. Now I need to Google it. This
right.
is awful.
No, it's not. Remember, we're being imperfect.
Yeah.
And we're just
going
for it sometimes.
Yeah.
But I just wanted to highlight that pride and say that that's part of this movement towards the community being accepting and inviting and welcoming and being a part of changing this invisibility, right?
It's so interesting because I just went to the website for AMBI because I couldn't help myself.
Of course. I think it's great.
And it says, what is AMBI? AMBI is a social club with a mission. So all I can imagine is that AMBI is I am bi.
Right. I am bi.
I am bi. So anyhow, thank you so much for listening. And we look forward to... chatting with you at our next episode.
Yes.
Stay tuned. Till next time.
Oh, and if you're feeling at all inclined, we'd love for you to go to iTunes and give us a review and give us stars and all that good stuff. We really appreciate it.
You can find those links on our Anchor FM.
Right. And our Facebook page.
And our Facebook page and our Instagram.
Right.
It's all there.
Yeah. It's all there. Thanks, everyone.
Till next time.
Thanks, Alana.
Bye, Lauren.
Bye.
The Consciousness Salon is owned, operated, and produced by Alana Roche and Dr. Lauren. Music is produced by DJ Roche and edited by Tyler Hood.
We would love to hear from you. There are a number of ways to contact us. My website is www.drlaurencostine.com. That is DrLaurenCostine. And I have a Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram page.
You can reach me at www.alanaroshay.com. That's A-L-A-N-A-R-O-S-H-A-Y. You can find me on Instagram and Twitter as well. This podcast represents the opinions of Dr. Lauren Costin and Alana Roche and their guests on the show. The content here should not be taken as medical advice. It is for informational purposes only, and because each person is so unique, please consult your healthcare professional for any medical or mental health questions. Thank you.